I was going to say, who's the sponsor?
We don't know.
Tonight on All New Two Broke Girls.
Brought to you by Craig Goldstein's Pies. They're hot, just like his takes.
Welcome to episode 70 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and George Bissell. How are you gentlemen doing this evening of Wednesday on the week before Thanksgiving?
I'm doing okay. You know, I think the last time we talked, Brett, was during Mouse send-off on Tino. That went well.
Yeah. That was a fun one.
That was a star-studded cast. I don't think we have such a star-studded cast tonight. Did you hear me on that, George?
Yeah, I think the first star goes to Harry for the awkward.
Harry was the star of the show.
Yeah, he absolutely killed it. That was a great few minutes.
Harry's always the star of the show.
If you had told me, like, I feel like it's like he was on before me, and it's like opening for Sinatra, or coming on after Sinatra. It's like I can't believe I had to follow him.
Yeah, I don't know how you follow that act. I thought CJ and Tucker were pretty funny too. They kind of just feed off each other. It's like a tag team. They're impressive.
Yep.
Yeah. So we are fully in off season mode now. No playoffs, there's still some awards lingering, but our boy just won the Cy Young Award, which is quite nice. Just a capper on top of a strong season for Jake Arrieta. So a hearty congratulations to Jake Arrieta on behalf of the Flags Fly Forever team. I would not have predicted that at the beginning of the season. I'm sure glad it happened, but I would not have predicted that.
Yeah, somebody pointed out his ADP was a little bit over 100, and I think in NFBC, and I think when we drafted him, it was even a little bit higher. So
it was. We had him ranked in the late 70s, I think.
We were really high on him. Yeah, late 70s or 80. Yeah, we were really high on him, but even so, we did not expect him to be a top 10, top 5 player overall.
We had him as a back end of the top 20, I think. And most people had him in that 25 to 30 range.
Oh, you mean for pitchers? Yeah.
For pitchers, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're both really good examples of recognizing when a guy's breakout campaign is legitimate, because both these guys were excellent the year before, and that really carried into this season. So I think that's part of buying in early on, guys, when you see a legitimate skills breakthrough and a guy pitching the way both Keuchel and Arrieta did. I think the time to buy in is before the huge campaign where they win the Cy Young, as opposed to after. That's good.
Yeah, and
going forward,
I don't want to, we're kind of jumping ahead to what our second topic is, but both Arrieta and Keuchel, these are guys I like to target from a valuations perspective, because both went under their price, or both went under what they earned last year in auction leagues, particularly Keuchel. And I just like targeting guys like that. I like when there's a pocket where people disbelieve and they're like, I know he's better, and I'm not completely let him slip through, but I'm also not going to pay anywhere close to what he earned. I feel like there's opportunity there to profit.
Yeah. I agree. So with that, let's roll into the show for the evening.
You can read us at baseballperspectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George said George Bissell, two S's and two L's. You can email us at flagsflyforever at baseballperspectus.com. We ask that you rate and review us on iTunes and the other stuff. With that said, we'll be right back. So we're going to start tonight by talking about just some of the quick hits from recent moves that have happened since teams have decided to wake up again. I guess the first one that we should talk about is the biggest deal, the one that most people are talking about, which actually has the least amount of fantasy ramifications of almost any of them, in my opinion. But you wouldn't know it by all the non-fantasy hot takes. That of course is Craig Kimbrel to the Red Sox for a bevy of prospects. Who are quite nice, including Manuel Margot and Javier Guerra. So, George, you are a resident New Englander. I had written in the transaction analysis that we put up over the weekend that this really doesn't change Kimbrel's value at all for me. Do you think his value ticks up or ticks down going from San Diego to Boston?
No, I think it's going to be the same. I don't have too many concerns about him long term. I thought Ben Carsley had the best take on it. It's where the Red Sox had all this prospect depth, and what good does it do you to really hold on to it when you have a huge need? And you can use that prospect depth to fill that with a guy like Kimbrel, where Koji Uehara is 41. I don't know how much time he has left, but
that was dark.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, Koji. I love you. 2013 was amazing. But you have to face the reality there that who knows when it's going to come to an end. Kimbrel, this got dark real fast. I didn't know it was going to go in this direction.
This is, you know, I think Dallas Arby's might be our new sponsor. Yeah,
it's dark times coming into this year for Boston. They still have a lot of issues, and Kimbrel doesn't solve those. But I think even in a worst case, if you want to say that his skills have kind of declined a little bit, if you look at the deserved run average, the previous two seasons he'd been under three. It was just over three in San Diego last year, but strikeouts are there. He's still an elite closer. If he's not number one or two, he's in the top five. So I don't think this hurts his value at all going to the American League East. It's such a small sample of innings. You're talking 60 innings, not 200. So I don't think it's going to impact him a whole lot with the transition moving away from the National League.
Yeah, I think I bet that's pretty much where I'm at. Mike, unless do you have any fire takes on this trade from a fantasy perspective?
No, the one guy I think, you know, I like more Roto the Dynasty. I don't even know if a lot of those prospects will be up next year. Maybe Margot at some point, but their outfield's crowded. I mean, Justin Upton probably isn't coming back, so maybe that accelerates his timetable a little bit. But yeah, closers are closers. Kimbrel's one of the best. He had a bit of a down year. He should be fine. There really isn't much to see from a fantasy perspective for me in terms of the change.
Okay, so two real quick questions. So you're in NL Tout. You will enter as the defending champion. Do you think Carlos Osuay goes in the draft? And do you think he is a reserve pick?
He's probably a reserve, although, you know, a lot will obviously depend on spring training and, you know, what happens as far as the hype. You know, these things sometimes are kind of hard to predict. If he has a good spring training, if there's a lot of hype, I can see him going for a buck or two. I don't really see him going for more than that, though. I think it's a low-end auction pick or a reserve.
Okay. And last question, if you had to put a percentage on it, what are the odds that the San Diego Padres closer on opening day 2016 is currently on their roster?
Well, 60-70%. It seems likely it's somebody there, just because they're not in a full blown rebuild like the Brewers or now the Braves seem to be. But they do seem to be taking a step back, and I can't really see them. You know, AJ Preller, the organization, did say that they have some more money now that Kimbrel and and you know, Joaquin are gone, but I don't think they're going to spend that money on a closer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although we have seen plenty of rebuilding teams kind of make that $3 to $4 million free agent signing, make them the closer, and then try to flip them at the deadline. So,
yeah, that's why I put that at 60 or 70%. If they sign someone on the low end to kind of, you know, helm the bullpen for a year, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, maybe they'll trade for AJ Ramos.
It's a possibility.
It's always a possibility. So let's move on to some of the other action. Anything interesting for you guys with the Andrelton Simmons trade? And does anything change much either for Simmons or Ibar?
I'll take this since I did the transaction analysis. I think I had said that for both of them, it's a pretty slight move, and it's really the AL to NL and vice versa. Simmons will get some more, you know, assuming he's at or toward the bottom of the lineup, he'll get a few more runs scored because there's a DH and he won't be, you know, in front of a pitcher. With Ibar, it kind of works the same way. And even if Ibar's up in the lineup, it just looks like a bad lineup and a bad team outside of Freddie Freeman. So he loses some of those runs and some of those runs batted in. But I think overall, and I've discussed this before on the show, and I think it predates you, George, from a valuation perspective, losing those runs batted in, it's not as much of a hit as some people seem to think. So, and you're talking about guys who aren't elite guys either, so they're not going to lose, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 runs or runs batted in. So that's kind of my take. I think Simmons loses a little bit. I think Ibar gains a little bit. I don't think it's a significant move in either direction.
I think Simmons is a little bit more relevant in the American League, but not much. He's not going to give you much in any single category to really be a huge factor fantasy wise. You're talking only leagues is where he has any value at all, pretty much.
Okay. Is there any other transactions that you guys want to discuss?
I guess I'll take Joaquin Benoit going over to Seattle. I kind of like that move. I don't think people really appreciate how good he's been since 2010. Pretty much the arsenal stayed the same. The velocity is still there despite the age. He's 39, so there are going to be people who want to discount him. But I think it's clear that he's sort of their guy going forward. I do like Benoit there. And they also made another move picking up Nate Karns. That I like. I think he's a solid SP3 type guy going forward, where he's in sort of an extreme fly ball guy. And his DRA right around 4 last year, he strikes out nearly a batter per inning. I think in that ballpark, he's going to be a guy who's a solid mixed league option going forward. I like that move for them as well. So Jerry DePoto's done a couple of things that I like. And I think both Benoit and Karns get a little bit of a bump up for me.
Yeah, I like Karns. I like Karns a good bit going to Seattle. He's not going to be a guy who's going to turn into any sort of, you know, SP1 or SP2. But he's a strong starting pitcher in a ballpark that very much benefits strong starting pitchers. So I would not be surprised if Karns becomes a nice sleeper for, you know, for potentially being a, you know, top 40 to 50 starter this year.
I don't think you'd have to pay that price either to get him on draft day.
No, I don't think you would, which you never know. Prices change substantially between now and when we actually draft. But as of right now, you're right. It doesn't look like that's the...
It doesn't look like that. What gets me nervous is I think in the sharper leagues, he's got that everybody's favorite sleeper kind of thing. So I think in the deeper mix or the only leagues, I could see his price spiking up, particularly as a good spring. Although I do generally agree with the premise that he's in shallower or, you know, standard mix, I think he's definitely an under-the-radar guy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else before we move on to the valuations?
Just to mention quickly, you know, a couple things. I think the closer situation now in Milwaukee with Francisco Rodriguez moving to Detroit is going to be interesting. It seems like there's a few guys there that could close. Jeremy Jeffress is the guy I think I'd kind of look at right now as, I don't want to say inside track because it's early, but he's the guy from a fantasy perspective who's most intriguing. And then another Seattle trade, Leonis Martin, you know, he fell off the radar last year, but he's a guy who earned in the low 20s, high teens, and AL only the year before. Just with the speed alone, if he plays or gets any number of bats, I think you have to kind of already, you know, look at him as having a value uptick. He wore as welcome in Texas, but he's someone who certainly could earn if, you know, if the average pops back up to, say, 260, 270.
Yeah, I actually did the transaction analysis, the fantasy side of that, and there was a cool stat with Martin where from 2013 to 14, so the two previous seasons prior to last year, he was one of just six hitters to hit 260 with 30 stolen bases in back-to-back years. So there's some huge fantasy bounce back there with speed declining sort of across the board. He's kind of a nice speculative guy in the late rounds and even in mixed leagues, I think, to take a shot on.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Cool.
Sorry, Tom Wilhelmsen. It was nice knowing you.
Wilhelmsen
and Uehara, and there are a couple of of American
Bruce Rondon.
Well, at least with Wilhelmsen, he's, you know, it's not like there's anyone right now in that bullpen who could definitively close. And you know, it's funny, I'll say this for AL only owners, doing the annual, and I did the Rangers on the teams I did, the Rangers did such a good job in kind of reinventing relievers and improving their stuff and helping their secondary stuff. And I'm not saying Wilhelmsen will close, but if you're an AL only and you're looking for one of those like middle relievers, this is a nice segue into our valuation piece, who can contribute, you know, at the back end of your staff, like eighth, ninth pitcher, those Rangers guys might not be bad to look at.
No, those Rangers guys are pretty nice between him and Keone Kella and Sam Dyson. It's a pretty strong bullpen.
Jake Diekman is another one who improved. It's a pretty deep, you know, intriguing, you know, bullpen, to the point that I think Tanner Shepherds, who a couple of years ago looked pretty good, might wind up being the odd man out.
Yeah. So now rather than just talk about transitioning, let's actually transition over to the valuations, because Mike's been putting out some excellent work at BP over the last couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about it both today and the next podcast as well. But I kind of want to just have you start with really a two, you know, like a 90-second overview of sort of what you do, what the process is, and what you think the most important things to get out of doing these prior season valuations for fantasy owners going forward.
Well, what I'm doing is I'm basically taking a look at how three of the expert leagues in the NL and AL only, CBS, Labor, and Tout, bid versus how these players actually earn from a standings games points perspective, which basically means I'm looking at the auction rosters as opposed to the entire player pool. And additionally, I will be taking a look later at mixed leagues, which will kind of be targeted more on deeper mixed and what we did in Labor in a 15-team league. So what I'm trying to see is, and trying to find trends, I'm trying to find, you know, if people, you know, spent more on pitching, if they spent less on pitching, what the return was. You know, and every year I do this, you know, I find that the more things change, the more they remain the same. But there's also some small kind of nuggets that I find every year that, you know, in terms of the way people are spending or the way players are earning, which kind of give you a little bit of an advantage heading into the next year.
Cool. So do you want to start with the National League?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's start with the National League, and you know, we can certainly go with the hitters. I think National is a good place to start because those articles are up already. And the spreadsheet, just to let our listeners know, the spreadsheets with the valuations are out there as the articles are coming out. So by the time you listen to this, National League and American League should both be out there, and you should be able to see, you know, everything in terms of how I have it stacked up in terms of earnings for, you know, NL hitters, NL pitchers. It's also a subscriber access only, so it's not something that's going to be out there on Twitter. It's only something that you'll get through Baseball Prospectus subscription. So The first thing that I noticed that jumped out in the National League about the hitters was last year the highest earning hitters didn't crack $35, which is very unusual. And something I kind of postulated and wondered about was whether or not there'd be a bounce back, because it didn't seem like there was a particularly strong crop of hitters outside of a couple of obvious candidates like Paul Goldschmidt and Andrew McCutchen. And basically what happened was that Paul Goldschmidt did bounce back from injury and he was the best hitter in the National League. But there were some surprises in the top five. And I think, I'll ask you guys, out of these three names, coming into the season, obviously is a benefit of hindsight exercise. Which of these three guys would have you been the most surprised by? Would you have been surprised by D. Gordon, A.J. Pollock, or Charlie Blackmon being in the top five of National League hitters at the end of 2015?
I would have been most surprised by Pollock.
Yeah, I like Pollock a lot, but I didn't think he'd be a top five guy at all. I didn't think this was possible to combine 39 steals with 20 homers right out of the gate while hitting 315. I thought he'd be more of a 290, 12 to 15 with 30.
Yeah, and the market bore that out because of those guys I mentioned and of the hitters in the top 10, Pollock was the biggest profit maker. He had an average salary of 19. He earned 40, and actually he was the most profitable hitter purchased at auction in the NL leagues, and with a $21 profit. The next guy was Cameron Maben, who was a little bit more typical of this type of player, where he cost two and earned 20. And finally, after years of people being bummed out about Maben, he produced when he was a bottom of the barrel guy. So just to get back to those top hitters, I found it interesting. You had some familiar names like Goldschmidt. You have someone like Bryce Harper, who had a very disappointing year in 2014, and then because of injury, and then bounced back in a big way. And Anthony Rizzo, who was very good in 2014 and built on that. But you also had some names that I don't want to say they're surprising, but guys, I think someone like Nolan Arenado, who we've been sort of waiting on to kind of build on what he's done before, who came through in a big way. And Joey Votto, who, I've always loved Votto, but I kind of shied away from him this year, particularly in batting average leagues, just because it wasn't necessarily I thought he would stay hurt forever. I just wasn't sold on the power coming back for him. So it was a pretty good group, and it was definitely a stronger group than it was last year. And it was a stronger group without Giancarlo Stanton, who, was second overall among the NL hitters, but, once again, missed some time due to injury.
Hey, so taking your microphone off mute is a good idea. God damn it!
Wasn't my technical glitch for a change.
How long do we have to do this before that stops happening? 5 years?
A thousand times.
1,000 years. We will be 90-year-old men complaining about everything. And the microphone will always be off.
You know what I was thinking today? I was thinking that I shouldn't say our kids, because we already have kids, but George's kids, George's kids someday will think it's an old person thing to put a picture up in social media in response to something. Oh, Dad, that's such a dad joke.
Yeah.
You know it, George.
It's totally a dad joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not. Look, we don't brand ourselves as being technologically advanced. This isn't a podcast where we review fucking iPads or
televisions. You think we could at least washers, like, connect to the call though, and have our microphones not muted? And I say this is the worst offender too. You think we could at least at a minimum do that?
You would think. So let's talk about more National League stuff with our mics on, preferably. I'll try to do my part.
Did you have to segue into the, just for a second, into the most expensive hitters, out of those players, who would you say, there were a number of players there who also were disappointments. I'm going to mention these guys and ask who you thought to you the biggest disappointment was. Do you think it was Giancarlo Stanton, Carlos Gomez, Troy Tulowitzki, Yasiel Puig, or Anthony Rendon?
I think Puig, relative to what people paid. I think people viewed him in the same light as a guy like Bryce Harper. So I know that's similar to where the ADP was on him. So I'm going to say Puig.
Feels like it should be Gomez, but yeah, my guess is Gomez, just because I think he was probably more expensive than anyone other than Stanton.
Yeah, and the answer actually, kind of depends on, how your league rules play. If you play with where you lose, and I think most leagues now play that you keep the stats of a player gets traded over the American League. The biggest disappointment was actually Anthony Rendon. He lost the second most overall. He was paid 29 on average. Just because all the expert leagues really didn't adjust to his injuries. They kind of did in Tout Wars, but not completely. He went for a little bit less there. If you play in a league, though, where, once Gomez got traded out, you didn't get any of his stats, then it was Gomez. He was a little bit worse. It's kind of funny. There a lot of these guys, otherwise I call these big ticket items, were disappointing. But, some of them were for weird reasons. I think in the past, you look at injuries as the primary culprit with some of these players. And, while injuries were there, a lot of these injuries, we often talk about this, whether injuries are something you can predict or not, and guys being injury prone. There weren't a lot of guys on that losses list that I would classify as injury prone. I'd say David Wright certainly classifies as that. You could make the argument for Giancarlo Stanton, and I think some people would debate whether he's injury prone or if it's just a matter of bad luck. You can classify Troy Tulowitzki as that, although Tulo, oddly enough, was healthy with the Rockies and get hurt into Toronto. But I was kind of struck by how the guys that lost the most money were players who were hurt, but guys like Devin Mesoraco, granted, he's a catcher and there's some risk there, but it was just such a weird, freaky injury. Or someone like Corey Dickerson, who you just wouldn't think of as somebody who'd get hurt. I'm sorry, Brett, and just did.
Yeah, that was not fun.
I like Dickerson this upcoming year, though.
Yeah, I do, too. I'm kind of wondering, we get to next year, if there's going to be how much, we know his price is going to go up relative to what he earned, but I wonder how much of a if there'll be any of a discount, or people will just kind of ignore the injuries and pay close to the full freight.
Mike, you're talking about Carlos Gomez. His injuries this year, these are the separate injuries he dealt with. Hamstring, back, knee, wrist, hip, groin, and head.
Yep.
All separate injuries. I mean, it was a really weird year.
Yeah, definitely. And the Mets still got dinged for, not wanting him after the physical.
Hard to blame him.
Yeah. Do you guys have anything else on the hitters or in the National League, or should I segue over to the pitching side?
I want to touch on Billy Hamilton real quick, we could talk about him. He earned $22 this year, despite not really doing a whole lot other than stealing 57 bases. So my question is, how do you view him going forward? Because it seems to me like he's going to be one of the better values out there, because people aren't going to be investing in him as a huge breakout candidate anymore after seeing such a long track record of him struggling at the plate now. That I think if he improves even marginally, I mean, he's still going to be one of the better earners in the National League. I mean, do you guys see any chance of him improving at all or any signs like that? Because I think people are going to be so fed up with him that they're not going to want to spend, and I think he's actually going to end up being a pretty decent value in terms of what he's going to bring back.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to remember is that he did steal 57 bases, but he was only played in 114 games.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to value Hamilton all that differently than I valued him coming into 2015. I mean, sure, we saw the downside of his performance, but a lot of the same stuff still holds, and he became a way better base stealer. He was caught 23 times. He was successful 56 times and caught 23 times in 2014. In 2015, he was successful 57 times and caught 8 times. So Billy learned how to steal a little bit. And, that is the Reds don't have anyone else that they can reasonably put in center field. They're not going to be overly competitive. I think they're going to I think they're going to continue to give him the chance out in center for at least another season. And if he just rebounds to his 2014 numbers with his, you know, with his defensive value, I think that's enough to keep him in the lineup pretty much every day. I mean, that's a 2-3 win player. Even if he has a, you know, 300 or below on base percentage. So I still like him a lot. And I think a lot of people are going to steer away from him. And I don't think that's the right move.
I tend to agree with Brett. I don't think I'm quite as enthusiastic, but yeah, we took him in labor 2 years ago in what, the fifth round, I think.
Yep.
And you know, he went in the second round last year. Now it's a 15 team, but
actually I think it was the sixth round.
Maybe it was the sixth round, but you know, he was taken in the second round this year, and I thought that was a bit of a reach. And it wasn't just labor. People were really reaching for Hamilton in some leagues. And I think there will be a correction. If that correction is coming again in the fifth, sixth round, I think that's a good place to get him, you know, for the points that Brett makes. You know, and the other thing is in an only league, a 226 average, as bad as that, you know, is or sounds, it's not quite as horrible as it, you know, was a few years ago when, you know, hitters were just pounding the ball and, you know, things were going really well. And the other thing is steals are really down. Those 57 mm-hmm. steals that he put up last year are a lot more valuable, you know, contextually than it would have been a few years ago. So all those things kind of tell me that even if Hamilton still is not very good, and even if you assume there's no room for improvement, which I kind of reject that notion, he still could be a pretty solid earner. You know, I put a bit of a discount into him over Brett because I think there is that floor. And we talked this 2 years ago, Brett, we had him. You know, he could completely crater and fall off the map. I just don't see why the Reds would bench him unless he's hitting, you know, we had the discussion last year, unless he's hitting like 190 or 200 and he's so awful, you know, getting on base like 25, 24% of the time, where they have to do something.
No, and his strikeout rate took a noticeable step forward in 2015. He went from a 19% strikeout rate to a 16.5% strikeout rate. He put a big dent in his infield fly rate. His BABIP profile is not the profile of someone who has a 264 BABIP. That's insane. For someone who puts the ball in play with the type of profile that he does and the speed that he has, 264 is crazy. And I don't think that comes anywhere near continuing. I'm not going to pay for it, but I will say this. I think that there is just as good of a chance in 2016 that he is a 270 to 280 hitter with a whole crap load of steals as there was coming into the 2015 season. The risk is more, which is why he'll go later, but the upside is still there, and I'm totally fine paying a little bit more in risk for that kind of upside.
Yeah, and the other thing is the other big steal guy after doing it for a second year in a row, you know, D. Gordon is not going to go cheaply. I'm not even questioning whether he'll do it again or not, but you know, D. Gordon is going to be drafted, I think, the way Hamilton was drafted this year in the second round. And in an NL only, you know, D. Gordon's going to go for over 30. So it's kind of the question of, do you want Gordon, who you're reliable or no, you're going to pay for, or do you want to take a little bit of a risk with Hamilton?
I just think you look at the NL hitters overall and the top earners. I mean, there are a lot of guys who exceeded expectations and had great years. And then you kind of look at Hamilton, who's kind of the outlier, where he only had about 400 at-bats and still earned $22. And that would be considered sort of a down year given the expectations. He went for an average of $28 in the expert auction. So I think he could take a step forward, and I thought it was kind of worth talking about him for a minute. So I'm glad you guys
it's a good topic, the same for discussion path, actually. And I mean I think that's the thing. I think I could see him, I'm not as optimistic on the average, but I could see him hitting 250, you know, maybe 260 and stealing 75 bases. That isn't an unrealistic ceiling to me.
Yeah, if he gets 500 plate appearances, it's like that's almost a given. 70 bases.
Yeah.
And right. Unless he falls off completely, which to Brennan's mm-hmm. point, the BABIP profile really doesn't speak to that happening.
Mm-hmm. So should we go to the pitchers?
Sure. And we're talking on the night that the National League Cy Young Award has been decided. And, you know, I think one really nice thing about the pitchers this year is that you kind of saw this in fantasy, and you saw this because of the wins, but it lined up where, you know, Jake Arrieta earned 44, Clayton Kershaw earned 42, and Zach Greinke earned 41. And, I, you know, since I've been doing this, and this even predates Baseball Prospectus, you know, I have never seen three pitchers in the National League crack $40. And it was done in a year. It's not like it was a year where offense was crazy, and you would expect, like, just the best pitchers, you know, kind of like Pedro used to do, although Pedro's an extreme example, to earn way over, you know, the rest of the market. These are just three guys that were just really good and tremendous. And then behind them, you know, you have Max Scherzer, who very quietly earned 34. You have Madison Bumgarner, who actually had the best fantasy year of his career. Another couple guys at Brett Hunter labor team, you know, in Jake DeGrom and Gerrit Cole, you know, each earned 28 apiece. It was just an amazing year for pitching. And, you know, it's always – I'm always loath to predict this, and we know that one or two of these guys next year are going to slip. But it really looks like a bumper crop right now for National League pitching. And, you know, Greinke could wind up heading over to the American League. But, you know, otherwise, all these pitchers will be back next year.
Yeah, and I think the strong odds are that Greinke will stay in the National League at this point. But
right.
Yeah, it's a lot of riches there. So, it's going to make for a really really interesting run in drafts in like the second or third round, depending on when people want to take their pitchers, and it'll also, there'll be all kinds of leagues where different groups of those guys go for really high prices, just because there's going to be a lot of fluctuation in how owners view them. It's there's a lot of names to choose from, and there are very good reasons to choose all of them.
Mike, in NL right. Tout, you went into the room and you bought Clayton Kershaw and Goldschmidt.
Yep.
I should add, but do you see yourself doing that similar strategy again, where you go in and try and buy one of the big arms in the NL? Or because I know you talked about it a little bit, how you liked having, you know, the one big gun where you didn't have to worry about the ratios so much, you could take some more risks with the back end of the roster and the rest of the staff. Do you think that now that there are more options, you're going to do that again, or are you going to be more hesitant this time around to do that?
I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. I think that, you know, I had Kershaw price at 42. I paid 37. I don't think I'll be quite that aggressive. I'll probably put him somewhere in the high 30s, but I will have him higher than everyone else by a few ticks, just because he's established, just because he's Clayton Kershaw. You know, just because, you know, I think three of the last 4 years he's cracked $40, and it's just not something that anyone else does with any kind of regularity. You're not just paying for the, you know, him being head and shoulders above everyone else has been in the past. You're paying for the consistency. Like Jake Arrieta is an example of a pitcher. I know he was, you know, historically great in the second half, but if you had to ask me right now to blurt out a bid for Jake Arrieta, it'd probably be like 31, which, you know, sounds like I'm really cutting him short off of his 44, but that's kind of just the way it is for a pitcher like that, where it's like there's only so much money to spend. And, you know, if I get Arrieta for 29 or 30 or even 31, that's fine. If somebody wants to pay the full freight on him and say go 33, 34, it's kind of like, well, you know, maybe you'll get profit there again, but history says that you won't. Whereas with Kershaw, there's that stability, that reliability, where I'm going to move him down a little bit for the reasons you cited, because there's so many good arms out there, but I'm not going to, you know, just say, okay, you know, Arrieta, Kershaw, and Greinke are all on the same plane now. I just don't quite see it that way.
Yep. Brett, who would you rather have, Noah Syndergaard or Steven Strasburg next year?
Strasburg.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going Syndergaard there.
No, I love Syndergaard, but I would put Strasburg ahead of him. My question to Mike is that do you get the sense now that Kershaw is going to be easier to attain in leagues next year because of Greinke and Arrieta?
It depends on the league. I think in the expert leagues that's the case. Because in the expert leagues, no matter what the situation is, this is in the tighter leagues too, that play like the expert leagues, people only spend so much on pitching and have discipline. I think in some of the softer leagues, in the home leagues, and perhaps the CBS, it won't matter. People are just going to pay them what they think they're worth. So it's really a league-dependent question. If you're in a league where people are really disciplinarian about about what they pay or dollar values, yes, Kershaw's price goes down. But I could also see people looking at what he did last year, the 300 strikeouts, and saying, you know what, I'm going to pay like 43 or 44 for him again, and I don't care.
Fair enough.
I think it depends a little bit about the order in which they're nominated. For example, I'd want to get Kershaw. If I wanted to go in and get Kershaw, I'd want to get him out first because that's sort of going to set the market for everybody else. I think if someone like Arrieta or Greinke, Scherzer, if they get thrown out first and they go for a really high price, then everyone's going to overpay for Kershaw. So I think if that were my strategy in an auction, I'd want to get him out first to sort of set the market and see where everyone else is going to come in afterwards.
But keep in mind, though, you know, it's funny. Tristan last year, you know, we've talked about this several times. He called out Max Scherzer for 30. He froze the room, and I had the next call. And that was, like, in a weird way, that was, like, the biggest favor he could have done me. Because I think if he had, you know, just called out Scherzer for 20 and got him for, say, you know, even if he got him for 30, I think Kershaw goes up more for that reason. Whereas because of the timing of what he did and the way he did it, I think it kind of froze the room on Kershaw. So, you know, auctions are interesting that way. There's just a lot of gamesmanship, and, you know, it just so much of it depends on the personalities of the people in the room.
There is. You never want to be the person thinking too much in the auction.
Right.
Then you get yourself into trouble in all kinds of ways.
That's true in life, though. It's just not auctions.
Yeah. That's true, but we don't care about life.
That's true.
Yeah. So anyone besides the big names, is there anything else that you noticed doing the review of National League pitchers that you think is an important takeaway?
Well, it wasn't just, you know, there were a few things. It wasn't just the big names that were big, you know, even the guys that were disappointing among the people we paid for. You know, the biggest disappointment among the pitchers that went for over 20 was Jordan Zimmermann. And, you know, he caught, well, it was Strasburg, but in terms of the floor of the earnings, Zimmermann cost 22 and earned 15. And as I pointed out, you know, it's obviously that's not great, but it's not like in the past where one of these guys like cost 20 and earned 5 and, you know, flamed out. So even if you spent on a Jordan Zimmermann, you know, he didn't damage your team as much as someone like Gomez, Puig, or Rendon did, who we mentioned earlier. And, you know, we've kind of talked about this, and you alluded to this before, Brett, about drafts. You know, for years we've kind of resisted and have kind of been on the side of don't draft pitchers too early. Pitchers have been getting, over the last couple of years, more and more stable. I don't want to say they're as stable as hitters. I don't want to overstate that, and I think some other experts overstate that. But I do think the gap is closing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the you know, looking at the one chart in your NL pitchers piece, I mean, really says it all. Looking at the most expensive pitchers and what they did, and we're so accustomed to hearing, oh, you know, pitchers are so risky. Pitchers are unreliable from year to year compared to hitters. But that chart just that. Those numbers don't lie. I mean, the pitchers that cost money in 2015 made it back, and the hitters didn't do as well. And I think some of it is a little fluky. I think you will have there is more inherent risk in pitchers than there is with hitters, even when we're coming off of a season when there isn't. But But yeah, it's absolutely worth re-examining where we calibrate our brains going into these things when it comes to that debate.
Yeah. I thought the elite closers, I thought they all returned just as much as what you paid. I thought they all did really well, and I think they're actually pretty safe investments. I'm talking like Kimbrel, Jansen, guys like K-Rod, even AJ Ramos, who, they were late round guys. But I think going forward, Jairus Familia, Chapman, Hector Rondon, like I feel good about those guys on draft if I end up with one of those really elite guys.
Which of course means, given the volatility of closers from year to year, that like five of them are going to blow up. But yeah, your point's correct. And I made this point in the article, and I made a mistake, which I didn't get to editing, but there were pitchers, four closers from three teams who lost $4 or more on their investment. And there were Steve Cishek, who, really blew up, Jeremy Mejia and Bobby Parnell, who both lost, money, and Addison Reed. And everyone else, even if they didn't have the best year, like Aroldis Chapman and Kimbrel, who you mentioned before, were examples of that. They didn't have the greatest year, but in terms of return on investment, they were fine. They were a little disappointing, but they got the saves. Their overall numbers, were certainly good. They just didn't quite return what you paid for them. So, yeah, I think, this was the point I made. I think people are so averse to spending on saves or drafting saves. We didn't see this in labor so much, Brett, but I think in a lot of leagues, and I think in tout, the pendulum swung the other way, where people really don't want to spend on closers. And if your league's like that, by all means, jump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's going to be something we see change in March. I really do think that's something that we're going to see a noticeable difference in. But if not, we might end up with a real closer this year. Who knows?
Yeah, it's possible.
Anything's possible.
Oh, I left out Ken Giles. He's good too.
Yeah, he's really good. And it's funny, the Phillies say they're entertaining offers, but I just can't see anyone paying the combination of like years worth in his contract and ability in terms of what they'd have to get to for a deal like that to make sense.
Yep.
Yeah. So that ended up going a little longer than we thought. So why don't we save the American League for next episode so that we don't shortchange it. Okay. And let's take a break and we will be right back. Do it for episode 70 of Flex Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. You have been listening to me, Brett Sayer, Mike Gianella, and George Bissell. Read us at baseballprospectus.com. Go there, sign up for membership, read all our stuff. We are rolling out the top 10 prospect list starting this week, which is really exciting. So you will see all of that there. And come and stay for all of our fantasy stuff as it gets ramped up. And with that, have a good evening, and we will see you after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we'll see you in December, actually. Bye, everybody.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hope everyone eats a lot of pie.
Craig.